just meet me in the middle. I'm losing my mind just a little. So why don't you just meet me in the middle? In the middle.
Back here on 102.5 The Game, Willie Donick has joined the mix. Garrett McFarland, Willie Donick, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5 alongside the OVC has come out, guys, and said they are going to go back to Evansville. They'll be back at Ford Ice Center.
There is ice in there.
Can you imagine Ford Ice? Maybe the Ford Ice Center hosted the OVC men's and women's basketball tournament. But no, they're going back to Evansville the next 2 years.
You know who's thrilled about that?
Evansville?
Them. And Murray State.
Murray State.
Murray State will take over.
They did this year, and if they're in the mix, they will take it over in all future years as well. I mean, it's a beautiful arena. I was up there. It is, you know, a world's better facility than municipal. The question is just...
Yeah, you're saying it's better than municipal.
I know that's shocking. It is. And so, I mean, if you're going for what's the best facility, it's clear that's it. And because Murray State was in the championship game, I think their attendance numbers were pretty darn close overall to what it would be for any other event. The thing was, though, there was no one there for the women's games because it was in Evansville. And that's what you get at least here in Nashville is you're close enough and in the center of the conference and you have two schools in the city and others that are, you know, 30 minutes and an hour away and all that sort of stuff that you just get people to show up even for the day if they're not driving in, not to mention the city's just better for your extra activities besides all you can do in Evansville is go to the casino. So, you know. Overall, the city here is better. I sure as heck wish it was here. But I get it from a facility standpoint. The Ford Center is better than Municipal Auditorium. And so far, Municipal in Nashville hasn't really seemed to want to put any money into that to keep the tournament here.
It seems like they have their set number of attendance no matter where they have it, and that's kind of where they are. It doesn't feel like it's going to really change no matter where they are, right? It's like – their core, they rely heavily on Murray State. I mean, there's just there's only a couple schools that are really – so you know, kind of know what you're going to get, which leads me to what we've talked about before. I wonder why they just don't do what some of the other smaller conferences do and just have home games. Why not do that? Reward your better teams with home games.
I think all things considered, for a smaller conference – if you want your best team in there, if you want an upset in the tournament, which is really the best thing your conference could hope for, then give your best team the best chance of winning. Let them play on their home court. I think that makes a lot of sense because I don't know too many of these tournaments that make money, right? That's the consensus, right? The myth, I think, is that the tournaments generate revenue. They get TV money. But that doesn't change whether the game's at a home court or at a neutral site, right?
See, the OVC gets more money because having do it all at one site, they not only get their championship game on ESPN that first night of championship week, but they, for several years now, have had both semifinal games on ESPNU, which is part of their package throughout the course of the season. That TV package has generated the OVC money. And I'm not sure if you had individual sites if you'd get the semifinals on because that's a different setup for the network. Huh. So I get that perspective. That said, to your point, Willie, the greatest way to make money is have your team get in and win like UMBC. That one win in the tournament pays way more than any dollar figure you're getting for your tournament above and beyond what those individual games is. So, I mean, it is every conference, in my opinion, when you're talking about a one-bid league, your sole focus should be producing the best possible team in the NCAA tournament to give you the best possible chance to win a game.
Yeah, I'm wondering just what does the semifinals on that Friday night, those two games, what does it really give them? Like, how much is that
really
tipping
the scales?
Well,
tonight where not much is going on. It's like you're – because most of those major colleges aren't playing on Friday night. So that's one thing to look at.
Gives them exposure.
Yeah, but, I mean, monetarily, that's what they're that's what it's all about, for sure. Let's go to Richard Deitch, who's up in Toronto, and he's up in Toronto, and Toronto is in Nashville, as the Leafs and Predators will do battle tonight here at Bridgestone Arena. Richard, how you doing?
I'm not in Toronto, but still doing well. Thank you.
Oh, you have not. You're not officially in Toronto yet, full time.
No, I have not. I have not officially moved yet. I was in Toronto for a couple weeks, but that was a short stint. Now back in New York for a couple months, and then back to Toronto.
Okay, so that's what threw me off. The last time we spoke, you were in Toronto. Okay,
I wasn't. Yes, that is true.
You know, so you're not there full time yet, and it's very rare to get me because one, Predator schedule and everything, that's part of it. But two, I grew up an NBA fan, and I root for the NBA, but I have a hard time with the NBA today because it's just so darn predictable, and it's just so easy to figure out who's going to be there at the end. But like when you get last night, Cleveland versus the Raptors, I did check it out. I mean, I did watch. And so when you get those matchups, Warriors and Rockets, I'll pay attention. We were talking about this earlier, Richard. It is amazing. And I realize I'm in the minority because the NBA has already proven me wrong because I don't understand why people pay close attention to their regular season. To me, it's meaningless. The players and coaches have told you it's meaningless, but yet – their ratings just keep going up. It's clear the fans love the star power in the NBA. Why do you think they're able to do that, where they're the best at any sport at selling their stars? It's truly about the players, not the teams.
Yeah, I'm certainly 180 from you. I love the NBA. I think the regular season's great, and you hit on the reason why. It's because there's no better league in professional sports right now that connects, I think, its players to its fan base. A lot of that has to do with social media and how well the NBA has not only facilitated its individual players to have their own social media presence, but the NBA is not restrictive when it comes to showing their highlights or allowing their highlights to be available everywhere. They're not tracking people down a lot of times like the NFL does. They allow their best plays to be seen by everyone, and I think that connects them to a young audience. Obviously, there are specific things like you could see all the players. They don't wear helmets, so you get a sense of who they are, what they look like. They're incredibly colorful. They have great personalities. They have great individualism, whether that's in fashion or their ability to talk about politics, to their ability to cross over into popular culture. And then lastly, just the athleticism of the league is just pretty breathtaking to behold. I mean, there's just one, like, you know, it's not the best example, but like all of us have probably thrown a ball and all of us have hit a ball. Most of us can't hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball, but we've at least done that. It's just there are things NBA players do, including dunks, that you can't ever possibly imagine. Or I shouldn't say, I mean, there are some people who can dunk. The majority of people can't. So I think that's part of it, too, is they just do some things athletically just because of their size that just makes them really, really unique. And especially the younger people, like, I think just puts them in a different place than some of these other sports. That said, and you guys know this in Nashville, every community is always, you know, there's certain sports that are always going to pop in a community bigger than others, and a lot of that just has to do with success. So, you know, the Predators get to the Cup again. If you put an NBA team in Nashville, I still think the Preds would be more popular just because they're a hot team and they have, arguably the best team in the league. They have a chance to win the Stanley Cup. So some of it is certainly cultural and where you are, but I just think the NBA's each player is such an individual who's able to sort of promote their individualism, and I think that makes a big difference when it comes to people following them.
Yeah, I don't understand why. Look, if any of us, the four of us, were owners, I don't know why they wouldn't copy some of the models that are out there that are proven are working. I mean, I think the Predators and the Raptors are great examples of outside-the-box thinking and getting their fans involved and invested in the team. And yes, is it about success, and does success help? Of course. But it seems very clear with when you see the playoffs, when we get there, kind of the scene outside of Toronto and what they'll do, and people just staying out there by the thousands just watching the game from outside the building. It becomes kind of the place and the thing to do. It's certainly going on here. You know, I just don't understand why, Richard, people – everybody isn't trying to copycat those models. And there are other examples, but we're talking about, you know, these two markets. And I think they have nailed it when it comes to getting the fan base and the city and everybody embracing what they're doing.
Again, I totally agree with that in terms of, you know, you have to know what your fan base wants, and you have to go out into the community and attract them. I do think, though, that it's very, very hard, even if you have a great community relations and even if you have some great marketing ideas, very hard to sort of have any kind of sustained fandom unless you eventually win. There are probably some places where there's a counter to that and people will go in. The Cubs were obviously the greatest example for a long time in that they never really won anything, but people went out. But that's just unique. I mean, you have one of the most unique, if not the most unique, baseball facility in the world in Wrigley Field. I do think there has to be a component in terms of you have to have some kind of success. And that's where, obviously, like the Predators and the Raptors have found themselves. You know, the Raptors in particular, the last couple of years, have had tremendous success. And then this year they have the best record in the Eastern Conference. A little bit, at least in terms of Toronto, and this sort of played out a little bit in Cleveland, was a bit of Toronto's got a bit of a chip on its shoulder because there's a belief that the American media, particularly the American networks that air sporting events, give a short shrift to Toronto teams because Toronto teams obviously were not counted in the ratings. So there's a thought. There's been a thought process in Toronto. It's a little. I mean, some of it's true. Some of it's just, I think, Torontonians just sort of trying to find something of this idea that, you know, people don't want the Raptors to succeed because they're a non-U.S. team. So that was interesting to me to learn about. When I was up there, this idea that there's a lot of Raptors fans who think big U.S. entities are against them. The fact is, there is some truth to the idea, and this is definitely in the NHL. The NHL wants Blackhawks. We talked about this on your station many times. NHL wants Blackhawks, Flyers, Rangers. They never want the Leafs. They never want the Oilers. I do wonder how Predators games are doing. My guess is they're probably doing a lot better just because the audience in Nashville's probably been so strong.
Richard Deitch is with us. Richard, the NCAA tournament, certainly you have to think in terms of drama and close games and excitement, was pretty high on a scale of 1 to 10. How is that translated to what you see in their coverage and the ratings they're getting?
Yeah, I always think Turner and CBS do an excellent job in terms of their production. I love the idea that you can basically, you're your own producer, and that you can go to any game you want. You can choose to watch a game in its entirety, or you can flip around to the different games, especially on that first Thursday, Friday. Ratings are a tick down. And in terms of why, I think that's more of just a product of that's just sort of, again, where we are in today's world. I think most sporting events, even major ones, are going to go down. I think they are hurt a little bit by the fact that there is no great college basketball team. This is where you get hurt by players leaving for one and done. There's no continuity in the sport, and you don't get a casual fan like who might know that, you know, Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, so-and-so, they played together for two or three years. Like, it's, that just doesn't exist anymore. So often, like, the best players who will be in the draft next year are just slotted across the country, and if they're not just sort of over-the-top superstars, the average fan, I'm not sure, even has a massive interest. Like, I wonder how many people – just were like so interested in Arizona just because they have projected number one pick in the draft. So the numbers are down a little bit. Again, people will watch the Final Four and the finals because they always do. So I think the coverage has been generally good. The numbers are a little down.
Richard, one of the things that is clear of what they want to do is show the emotional attachment that people have to their teams, not only the kids in the stands and the cheerleaders and the flute players and things like that, like we've seen before. And I know there's been some discussion about how long you should show the crying child after the loss. But what I did like a lot was, for example, Candace Parker, after Tennessee lost the heartbreaker, they showed her reaction and they got her. I'm sure Charles Barkley was not happy with how Auburn performed. But I thought that was good. I do think that's a lot of what you have to lean on now for the reasons you just said. You don't have teams that have been together 2 or 3 years that you can follow and know, so it has to be that emotional attachment.
For sure. I mean, that's really the draw of the tournament. Twofold. One, the brackets, which are the true stars, and two, obviously, connection schools, which so many people around the country have. If they either attended that school, lived in that community, or just for whatever reason have an attachment. I have to be honest with you. The uproar in some quarters over showing little kids crying too much has to be among, in my opinion, the biggest waste of time of all time. One, if you're taking somebody to a game, like, they're going to be on camera. And, like, if you're taking a little kid to a game, that's sort of one part of the deal. Two, and this is, again, when I see some media people writing about this, I'm like, sort of step back for a second and think about this. You're upset at network television for showing a child too long, but you're not as up in arms about, like, these same networks not discussing CTE, concussions, and, like, real issues that matter. Like, to me, if we want to sort of get in an uproar about stuff that matters, like the enabling that goes on with broadcasters when it comes to overhyping coaches, not talking about the underbelly of the game, not talking enough about medical stuff. I mean, to get in an uproar because, like, some five-year-old is crying because the University of Virginia, you know, went down to UMBC. You know, I'd say relax, one. And two, that's part of the drama. Like, I think it's great. I think I like seeing the emotions of the crowd. God forbid, you know, ESPN or CBS shows us a kid crying in the crowd as opposed to, like, a 75-minute shot of the cheerleaders. They'll claim not to show sex all the time, but let's not kid ourselves, guys.
Right.
So, you know, that was just a very funny I know a lot of people were up in arms and people jumped on it, but, like, that was a funny one to me because, like, I feel like there's just a lot of other things to worry about. I don't know. Maybe I'm a sadist. I love seeing people crying when they're doing it. I think it's very good imagery, first of all.
It is. It's compelling images.
It's authentic.
Richard Deitch, now of The Athletic, joining us here on 102.5 The Game. Richard, you talk about how there's no dominant team in the men's game, and that maybe hurts the NCAA tournament. There absolutely is a dominant team in the women's NCAA tournament. UConn scored 94 in the first half last week and won by 88. Is that in any way, shape, or form good for women's college basketball?
Well, and keep in mind, they won their next game by 40. So this is another one that bothers me because I've covered the sport for a long time, probably seen more games than 99.9% of the American public. UConn is the best team. There's no doubt about that. They are going to win this year, you know, unless something crazy happens. They don't win every year. They lost last year to Mississippi State in the Final Four. South Carolina won the tournament. But the one thing where it is true, and there's not a solution for this at the moment, but in the first round of the NCAA tournament, when you have some of these really top-tier teams, you know, UConn, Baylor, Louisville, like if these, we're talking about teams that may have 3 or 4 All-American type of players, if they go against a very, very low conference team, like UConn went against St. Francis, you're looking at 40, 50-point blowouts, and obviously in UConn's case, whatever ends up being crazy, 70-point blowout. That's the problem. I shouldn't say a problem, but that's the difference between the men's tournament and the women's tournament, is that the women's tournament has gotten closer, and the top 25 is so much better now than it was even 10 years ago, but the top 64 is still not great when you make that comparison to number one. The 64th best team in the country against the number one best team in the country in the men, they'll give them a game, and maybe, you know, one out of 10 times that 64th team is going to win. It's almost inconceivable to think that the 64th best team in women's college basketball could beat UConn 50 out of 50 times. It just wouldn't happen. That's the difference in the sport, is that the lower level D1 schools, who are conference winners in those lower conferences, they're not close to the top team. So this issue is going to come up again. You're going to see blowouts in the first round, and I don't know what can change other than the sport just has to keep evolving and more girls have to go into women's basketball, and the player pool just has to get deeper.
And for that reason, maybe the most underrated upset of all time is that Harvard over Stanford, 16-1 upset in the NCAA women's tournament 20 years or so ago. I want to ask
Crazy.
You one more.
By the way, an Ivy League school, which doesn't always have the greatest history in women's basketball, against, at the time, a power school in Stanford. So good point by you on that.
And then one other thing I want to bring up to you, because I know you're so entrenched in this and know all about it, is the NFL draft. To me, it's starting to feel like a presidential debate where just every network is going to go wall to wall with these things and have it on at the same time. Is that good for – it's obviously good for the NFL, but is it good for us as consumers? What are we going to get now that it's on basically every sports network all day long?
I mean, honestly, at this point, one, I'd have the Home Shopping Network, Bravo, E! Entertainment Television, and, you know, Vice. Just pick up their own version of the NFL draft. I mean, this basically was the NFL giving the middle finger to ESPN. ESPN built the popularity of the draft. It's been one of their signature shows. Obviously, the NFL Network's come along and done a really good job, so they split it between the two. But giving it to Fox this year in particular, which is only being done to get some more eyeballs on the NFL draft and to really sort of screw ESPN. There's no other reason for it, because you are just taking audience from them. It's not, in my opinion, viewer-friendly, because I think that the split, to me, makes it a little more – I guess viewer options are good, but it's going to make it a little confusing for viewers in terms of, well, where am I supposed to go? What network is giving me the NFL draft? What network's going to have a college-oriented draft on it? ESPN is going to be doing a college-oriented one where they have their college game day guys part of it, you know, which could be, I guess, interesting TV. But it's you're going to see, like, some very weird splits here on the audience. The NFL is going to win because they're going to get more audience, but I'm not sure it's going to be so great for viewers because, and this is no disrespect to Fox, but it's just like, they have no history in doing the NFL draft. There's honestly no reason for them to come in and do it. And the only reason they're coming in is because, again, I think the NFL is just screwing around with ESPN. And then you can sort of ask yourself the reasons. Is it because the management doesn't have a great relationship with ESPN? Or, and I think there's probably some validity here, is the NFL pissed off that ESPN's been pretty aggressive when it's come to some of their reporting, particularly on the owners? And that's where I think, if I had to take a guess, that's where some of this lies. I think this is a big middle finger, single digit to ESPN for doing some aggressive reporting.
Richard, we'll tell Austin Matthews you said hello, and you'll be talking to him soon when you're up there on a permanent basis.
That'd be a tough one for the Leafs tonight, man. That, as you know, that defense of the Predators is first class. It's
pretty darn good.
Leafs could use one of your defensive players if you're looking to give one away. That's what the Leafs need, in fact.
Don't think that's going to happen tonight, but, hey, always a pleasure. Have a good rest of your day. We'll do it again next week.
See you, guys.
Richard Deitch from The Athletic, and, of course, he will be up in Toronto. He's going to be doing some radio up there, too, on a full-time basis. Always good to catch up with him. Back to wrap up the second hour next.